Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Downtown, Petco Park, a new beginning. Let's go. Started back rocking the brown. Ever since we've been knocking them down. Baby said she wanna go to the game. Taught her how to say Padre gang. Started back rocking the brown. Ever since we've been knocking them down. Mitchell and Ness with the old school name. All of the homies holler Padre gang. Yeah, they.
And good day, everybody. Welcome to episode 178 of the Talking Friars podcast and YouTube show. I'm your host, Ben Fadden, here with Jacob Zimmerman. It's been a while. For those that are new, Jacob is my cousin. He was a pretty consistent co-host, but then I was at St. John's University, New York, and so I was recording at some inconvenient times. But I'm back in San Diego, and so that makes it much easier for us to record together and go live together, and so that's what we're doing today. Before we get started, this episode is brought to you by Gaglione Bros, famous cheesesteaks and garlic fries. You can get it inside Petco Park during the season. You can get it at the Mission Gorge and the Point Loma locations, and visit gaglionebros.com to view their entire menu, the addresses, the phone numbers. I don't think I'm missing anything else. All that good stuff. All right, Jacob, how's it going? The Padres just took 3 out of 4 in Milwaukee after didn't seem like they were going to win a game on the road trip, really.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm glad to be back. You know, it's been a while. Feels good to be back on the show. But it feels good to, you know, win a series on the road that didn't seem like we had it. You know, we almost blew a couple of them there at the end. We did blow one, but it was good to get this final one here in Milwaukee.
Yeah, they blew... Today, for those that didn't watch the game, Nick Martinez came in after Clev, and he had it for the first, like, 4 innings that he pitched. Then they came out there for a 5th inning, and he couldn't get an out. Then they brought in Robert Suarez, right? Brought in Robert Suarez, and then Tim Hill. With the bases loaded, Tim Hill gets out of it. He pitches the 9th inning, shutout in there. I think he allowed one base runner, which allowed it to get to the 10th, where Craig hit that 3-run bomb after Profar got a single. I want to put that out there to have an extra runner there. Azokar was on second. I think he got hosed, by the way, on that check swing call in the 9th inning. But that doesn't matter. Padres end up winning. They're now 33-21. Going to shortchange him a win there. 33-21 after getting swept by the Cardinals. And it just didn't feel like it was going to be a very successful road trip. And I still hesitate to say that this road trip was successful. They went 3-4 at the end of the day. They had a losing road trip. They got swept by the Cardinals. I don't think that's really a successful road trip, but what I'd label it, and I'll ask this to the audience, those that are in the chat here on YouTube, what would you say if you could describe this road trip in one word? How would you describe the road trip? Like, how would you grade it? Like, I wouldn't say it was successful. I wouldn't say it was terrible because they ended up winning three games. I'd say it was fine. What would you say?
I would say that too. I'd also like to add on kind of that it was good that we won on the back end of the road trip, you know, so we have a little bit more momentum going up against this upcoming Mets series because we're going to need it. They're a good team. But I also had kind of like flashbacks towards the end of last year when, you know, once we went on that road trip and we just did not win a game at the beginning of this road trip, I had flashbacks towards that. But it was good that we won on the back end of it, I'd say. That was the big takeaway for me.
Yeah. Anthony here in the chat says a C minus. I think that's a little harsh. They did just win three games in a row.
I give it a B minus, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd probably be around there. Because I do want to say it's not like they were playing the Orioles and the Pirates. Like, they were playing the Cardinals and Brewers. Those are two good teams.
Good teams. Yeah.
There are just some ones, you know, that. Obviously, it could have went better. There were some points that they blew it when they shouldn't have, you know, Taylor Rogers and today, even though they got the win. And then that St. Louis series, there were some, you know, Snell didn't Snell pitched that series, right? I think he pitched better than he did the Philadelphia series.
Yep.
But overall, I mean, Stephen Wilson, that's who it was that sucked in the St. Louis series. And that's kind of one that stands out to me. By the way, he wasn't sent down today. That didn't really make a whole lot of sense. We can get into that. But first off, let's start with yesterday's game, and then we'll get to today's game. We're going live here on YouTube on Sunday, June 5th. So if you're listening to it on Monday or whatever, just context. I'm keeping Twitter open here just in case there's any comments that or any news that comes out. But getting to Saturday's game, the Padres end up winning this one 4-0. And after, I guess we could start with giving your reaction to Musgrove because you didn't get to do that. Because I wasn't planning on doing an episode after that, but he had a no-hitter through seven innings and then 7 2/3 innings, and then Wong gets the double. An amazing night there. And then on Saturday, they win 4-0. And I'll let you, you know, give your thoughts on Saturday's game and Musgrove, but Gore ends up going 15 consecutive scoreless innings in these last two starts. He went 6 shutout innings yesterday, 10 strikeouts, 3 hits, 3 walks. His ERA is now 1.50. I saw the Padres put out something on Twitter yesterday that he's the only pitcher since 1913, which dang. All I know is that's good. With 5 strikeouts, a 1.50 ERA in his first 9 starts. So think of all of those pitchers, right? Max Scherzer, Clayton Kershaw, just start naming names. Name a few names, Jacob. Since 19,
all the way back to Cy Young. I mean, you know, all the way back then, you know. I mean, Max Scherzer, as you said, Jacob deGrom, like all these big, good guys. And Mackenzie Gore is sitting by himself pretty much now. So,
yeah. And
that's what impressed me.
Yeah, and that just kind of that just shows how good McKenzie is, and it's kind of laughable that he didn't win the Rookie of the Month last month in, what was that, May. Look, who was that? Luis Castillo, I think, is his name with the Giants. I know he hit over 300, but, like, Gore was dominant. Like,
yeah, he's playing like an all-star right now.
Yeah, and I know as a hitter, like, yeah, you're going to fail all the time. But like Gore, he succeeded pretty much the whole month. I went through stats on the last episode about what Gore had done in that month. But he pitched amazing. And then Crony had an RBI double down the left field line, a 2-run homer to right field. And that was just the start of his amazing weekend in Milwaukee. Maybe he just likes hitting there on the weekends, or he had some brats before the game, or I have no idea. This guy,
it's Milwaukee.
He's back. Rodgers had scoreless ninth inning, and then the Padres win, obviously 4-0. They improved to 32-21 before getting their 33rd win of the season today. So I guess just give your thoughts on that game, and then you can talk about Musgrove as well, because I know you didn't get a chance to talk about that.
Well, I was talking about the Musgrove thing. I was excited because I was watching that game, and unfortunately the first no-hitter I wasn't able to watch because I believe I was at a football game. You know, I was back in high school. But this one I was excited. You know, I wasn't really sure if, you know, he would make it, you know, the high pitch count. I was wondering if, like, fatigue might start going in, you know, in the ninth. But then, you know, the Padre killer this series, Colton Wong, ended it for me, ended that hope for me. So it was a fun game to watch, though. We have to pay that man at the end of the day. That's all I have to say about that. And then going into Gore, that was the game I watched from start to finish. He did have a high pitch count, I noticed, through like about five, six innings, over 100 pitches. But he was striking out everyone, making everyone, you know, look foolish with the high velocity. Didn't give up a whole lot of base runners either. And, you know, he just looked dominant. He looked like a future ace of this team. That's, at the end of the day, that's, you know, all you want to see from a young guy like that. And then, you know, going into the MVP of this series, in my opinion, Jake Cronenworth, feels like he's starting to bounce back. Feel like we're getting that Jake Cronenworth back from last year, hopefully. But it was just nice to see, you know, a bunch of extra base hits, especially that big one today and, yesterday with the home runs. Yeah, it was just a good end of the series, these last three games.
Yeah, and you talk about Musgrove and him having to be paid. I had this discussion Friday night. Thursday was the collapse by Rodgers. But he's back, by the way, whatever.
Yeah.
He's thrown two shutouts the last, I think it was back-to-back games. Yeah, yesterday and then today when he came in. So that's the non-story. It always was. But with Musgrove, I talked about him getting 25 plus million a year, probably on a free agent market. You know, Jack Stronach went to Helix, a Padres prospect. He was saying, give him whatever he wants when I talked to him last week, I believe. Like, okay, let's put on our GM hat, or Jacob, you put on your GM hat or your owner hat. If you're Peter Seidler, like, who? I guess all I can ask is how much money would you give this guy and would you be okay with letting him hit free agency? I think I know the answer to it, but go ahead.
Oh, well, I mean, there might be a little bias here as a, you know, San Diego homer, you know, the guy that delivered our only no hitter, the guy who's been leading our rotation this year, I believe. I'd give him up to 30 million, to be honest, in my opinion. If it probably won't reach that much, but I give him close to, I think, 28. Per year, if that's what it takes. I feel like it could have been a little bit less earlier in the year, you know, when we offered him, I think, 11 million. I think that was a little disrespectful on Preller's part. But right now, he's pitching like a Cy Young, all-star at the very least. There's no question. I'm not letting him hit free agency. I'm doing whatever it takes to keep him. If that means going to 30 million, that's what it means.
Is it for like if you say 30 million, like, because 30 million over 8 years, that's now 240. Am I doing that math right? Yeah, I think I don't think that's happening, but 30 million over
I would 5 years, period, maybe 5 years,
4 or 5 years. Yeah, I think I hope it's not going to have to get to that. And if it's an extension, I don't think it's going to have to get to that, but. In terms of an extension, like if the Padres are going to let him get to free agency, at least put a 20 plus million dollar extension out there in the atmosphere and to his agent and say, okay, we're going to try. Here you go. We'll match maybe we'll match an offer. If you don't take this extension, you go to free agency. And maybe we'll match what the Red Sox or whoever offers him that money will offer, you know, that they'll offer. They'll match that. I think you could see them do that if they don't want to try to overpay for him in an extension, if that makes sense. But yeah, there's no doubt. This guy, he should probably be starting the All-Star game if it was my vote. I know it's at Dodger Stadium. And the manager, so it's Brian Snitker because they won last year. So at least it's not Dave Roberts because we know that then he Musgrove wouldn't be starting. But I guess that's good. But yeah, I think he's definitely a starter. You should be in the All-Star game right now with Scherzer hurt, with DeGrom hurt. That definitely helps. And yeah, definitely pay the man, as Manny says and Haas has said, and everyone
if
in
Manny
the city.
You have to do it at the end of the day, in my opinion.
It's pretty much everyone is saying it. So yeah, and then Gore, he I think is the rookie of the year right now. Luis Castillo, I don't follow him on a daily basis or whatever. It seems like his numbers are fine, but Gore, maybe it's unfair, but is it okay for at least Padre fans to keep into account what he did last year and how he sucked in spring training, couldn't get out of innings, was walking everyone, and now all of a sudden he's the best starters in the National League? And he would be the best starter ERA-wise if he had like five more innings under his belt to qualify for that amount, you know, the ERA leaders or whatever at this point in the season.
I mean, I don't think that's overreaction. I mean, as we literally talked about like less than 10 minutes ago, you know, he's making history since 1913. That's ridiculous. And I feel like not enough people are talking about that. I mean, when you see like on Twitter or Instagram, that I feel like not enough people are talking about that outside of Padres Twitter, of how like dominant Gore has been, and you know how much work, not work, but progress he's made in such a short period of time. Last year, people didn't know if he would be called up this year due to, you know, the walks and the control. And, you know, he just wasn't, he didn't look good for, you know, didn't he drop out of the top 50 prospects this past year?
I think he was like 80 or something. Yeah,
that's crazy. And now he's pitching like, as we said, he's pitching like an ace. You know, as you said, if he has five more innings, he would be one of the best in the National League. And I think that not enough people are talking about it. And I don't think it's an overreaction for Padres fans to be talking about it as much as they do.
Mm-hmm. And so that was Saturday. Talked a little bit about Musgrove and how he did on Friday. Man, this series, four-game series, it felt like a really long time. Today, I mean, a lot happened today. Pre-game and some news about Eric Lauer. I don't know if you saw that, about his comments about the Padres organization. I can pull that up. I mean, holy cow, a lot happened. We'll talk about the game, but I did want to talk about the move that happened prior to today's game, and then some Fernando Tatis Jr. news, and then the Eric Lauer news. And let's see. I just want to load this Eric Lauer news up real quick, so I can have it right when I want to talk about it. Because I think Kevin Acey wrote this. I have no idea where, if it was a newsletter or something, but I think he wrote it. It looks like it was from the Union Tribune. But we'll talk about that, and I'll share my screen about that. But on pregame Sunday, the Padres sent down Brent Rooker, and this was a couple days after bringing him up, and they sent him down to make room for Clev. Clev started today, went three innings. I thought he was going to go more. I said on the pregame show 4 to 5 innings because that's what he was doing all season, or not all season. He's had like three starts, but you get what I'm saying. But we'll get to that. But with this Brent Rook news, I mean, he felt like he was going to be this kind of like platoon bat with Nomar Mazara. Rooker's a righty. Mazara's a lefty. Both guys have power potential. Will Myers is on the IL. It just felt like, okay, those two will fill in right field. And so for them to bring Rooker up, have him not play, and then bring him down when they knew that they were going to activate Clev today before the game for him to start today, who's a pitcher, and you send down a hitter, that didn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, if you're going to send down Rooker a couple days after you bring him up and he's not playing, why'd you bring him up in the first place? If you're going to, it just felt like the obvious choice would have been like Steven Wilson, who is hasn't pitched in a while, and he's struggled the last couple times. Like, put him in the minor leagues then. Like, if you're not using him, why do you have him on here? And you could make the same argument with Rooker. You know, like, if you're not using Rooker, you're not going to use him. Why have him on the roster? But you're bringing in a pitcher, so send down a pitcher. That's what I thought. Did you think the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of hit it head on. At the end of the day, you need bench bats, especially if you're going for matchups. Like, as you said, Mazar is good, you know, when you want to bring it in against a righty because he's a lefty. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with Rooker the other way versus a lefty. I feel like it's just smart to have as many bench options with, especially with how many extra inning games we go into. You never know when you're going to need a bench bat. You don't want to pull a Tingler last year where you had to, you know, use your whole bench. That was ridiculous. I can't believe that happened. But I feel, at the end of the day, it would just be smarter to pull down a pitcher that you're not even using, get him some work in the minors.
Yeah, you talk about that Tingler game, the game I went to, and it was 16 innings. Yeah. And Weathers and Musgrove and I think Snell were all hitting. And they were hitting not in the nine spot. They were hitting as pinch hitters between Crony and Manny, or after Manny and Crony. Like, what are we doing? I'm glad that we have Bob Melvin, but let's just put it that way. All right, we hit on the Rooker news there with Tatis. I saw in Kevin Acey's newsletter this morning that Tatis is going to have a bone scan tomorrow for his wrist, and that'll determine if he can start swinging the bat and the timeline on that. So I definitely hope, and we all hope, he hopes the organization come from that scan. Good news did not come from it last time, or at least as good as what they thought. So they held off on that. Fernando's been with the team on the road trip, fielding, base running, all that sort of stuff, which is good. He's been doing that for a while, though. He's throwing, all that. It's not really a whole lot of anything to talk about with the bone scan. It's just a piece of news to, you know, put out there look for going into tomorrow and before Monday's game against the Mets. And we'll preview that series a little bit at the end here. Just look out for that news, and hopefully the news is good. And Bob Melvin will tell reporters tomorrow, hey, Fernando's going to start swinging the bat tomorrow or whenever. All right, so that's the Tatis news. And then today, Eric Lauer was on the mound for the Milwaukee Brewers. I think this was the first time that he faced the Padres as a Brewer. I don't remember any other time that he did. It started off good, but before we get to his performance, there was something that came out. I saw this on Twitter. Someone screenshotted it on Twitter and share the screen. Hopefully it'll load here. Hold on 1 second. For the YouTube audience, I'm sharing the article, part of the article that a fan screenshotted and put on Twitter. And for the podcast audience, I'll pretty much read it and we'll talk about it. So Manny Machado, what is this username? Manny Machado propagandist. All right. One of those young boy media profile bios. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, they are the one that tweeted this screenshot out. So I want to give credit to them. All right. Let's change the format here so it's not, there's not a white line in the middle of the screen.
Yeah. I can read around it. Oh, no, there we go. That's perfect.
There we go. Okay. Back to my old format. All right. So this came out. I know this is small. Here, let's see if I can increase the size.
We get a zoom?
No, it's not even going to work. Nope, not even going to work.
We're just going to read it then.
All right. So this was from, I think, the UT. And Eric Lauer, obviously, he wasn't great with the Padres, and they pretty much say it all here, so I'll just read it. Lauer was starting to feel at home in San Diego and felt very comfortable with his teammates when he was dealt, but Lauer also felt that something wasn't quite right, a, quote, really weird feel, a weird vibe, end quote, as he put it, within the Padres organization. At 24 years old, already had 2 years of big league experience, and along with current teammates Luis Arias and Hunter Renfro, he had been one of the team's top prospects before debuting, but felt a disconnect in the team message once he reached the majors. This is Lauer here. They were always kind of weird because in the minor leagues, they told us all like, oh, you guys are the future. You're the next wave. You guys are going to be the big leaguers we build the team around. Lauer said that after his first call-up in 2018, the message shifted. Quote, it was weird because once we got to the big leagues, it was kind of the opposite. It was like they didn't care about us and they didn't care about developing us. So it was a really weird deal. They told you how good you were, and then all of a sudden you weren't good anymore if you didn't produce immediately upon going up to the big leagues. Lauer continued. This was the writer. Lauer continued, but only after mentioning he didn't want to come across as bashing his former organization. He simply wanted to share his side. This is Lauer again. A lot from it's from the top down, the way it feels like they viewed you. This is him talking about how he felt the disconnect, and like who was the person doing the disconnect. Because when it constantly feels like you're constantly being looked down on because you're either a young guy or people don't think you know how to do your job, you start to pick up on that vibe. All right, so there's a lot said there, and yeah, I'll leave that up for you guys here in the comments. Give your thoughts. Feel free in the comments about what that was. That was really surprising here when I read this. Just him, you know, pretty much saying that they didn't really care about you, the Padres, or at least that's the sense that he got, that they didn't really care. You know, once he reached the big leagues, and it was kind of like, okay, kind of, you know, fend for yourselves. That's what essentially was being said there by Lauer. And this isn't like the first story. Like, I don't have specifics on other stories, but I know this hasn't been the first of former Padres not having, you know, the best things to say about the Padres development and their farm system people and Preller and stuff like that when they're gone. This wasn't Ty France, but just one thing where Ken Rosenthal wrote last year that before the 2020 deadline, Preller literally told Ty France weeks before the deadline that he was going to be a big part in the organization. And then he ends up getting traded. And now he's probably an all-star. There's that. And then Eric Lauer here saying this and how it felt like he wasn't really cared about once he reached the big leagues and he wasn't performing. That's not great. That is not great news. I know they made changes last offseason with the farm system and I think the scouting director and all that. It wasn't, there might have been one or two firings. Most of it was just rearranging of the chairs, if you will.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, this definitely was surprising. I mean, not surprising to see, but surprising to hear a player just openly say this. Usually it's like sources or something like that. Or, you know, anonymous Padre, former Padre. But I guess I respect, you know, the upfront honesty from Eric Lauer.
Yeah.
And Jacob, just, I guess your thoughts on this, it's not a good look on Preller and the organization. And I know Preller, before you go in here, I mean, I know has that, right, the history of dealing guys and always floating his players out there. Mm-hmm. But that's different from not caring about someone's development, even when they're in the major leagues and they're not maybe pitching as well as you would have hoped. You don't give up on them. You continue to try.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little concerning to hear because of, you know, as we heard last time with Ty France, as you mentioned, as you know, he said he was going to be a big part of the team moving forward and then he's gone just like that. Eric Lauer maybe felt that there was some sort of miscommunication. Maybe that's kind of what it sounds like to me, that there was a message that came across that wasn't maybe what the team wanted their players to, you know, see it as, but that's what they did see it as Lauer came out and said. It's a little worrying considering, you know, how many good prospects we've had and how many have been shipped off now and are doing well in other organizations. But I mean, you also look at the prospects we do have. Gore, he's came up, he's done amazing. Abrams is killing it in El Paso, struggled a little bit in the majors, but was killing it in El Paso. So I I'm not really sure if it's something due to the staff when they were here. That's kind of what it sounds like to me. But it was a little concerning to hear that, considering, you know, it was under Preller. And, you know, Preller probably had a big part in the message that came across like that, you know?
Yeah. And you mentioned Gore. I don't know how much that was the Padres development people. I think that a lot of that was Ruben Niebla. Abrams, is there a whole lot of development for them to really do with him? Like, he's just a Tatis freak of an athlete. He I just think it's him that needs more experience, you know, in the minor leagues.
I agree, yeah.
So I get the point there, but there's a lot of guys that Preller has given up on. And maybe that's
early too.
Yeah, and maybe it's him feeling the pressure to win and saying, okay, I'm gonna go get Clev. I'm not saying these are just examples I'm throwing out there of guys, but like Clev and going out and getting Nola and saying, okay, Mejia, Hedges, they're not working. I know Hedges wasn't there then, but they weren't working. Let's go get Nola. And that hasn't worked out probably as the way that they would have hoped. You give away Ty France, you give away Andres Munoz, you give away Luis Torrens, right? And he was, he's been hitting pretty good. I know he hit pretty good last year. So it just feels like a lot of jumping the gun, and maybe that's the pressure that he feels. I don't know why he would feel that pressure, though, unless it's just the internal pressure to win. Because from what we've heard from Peter Seidler, I don't know who Preter is. Sorry, that's not his brother. Peter Seidler. All we've heard from him is pretty much, I have a lot of confidence in AJ. He literally said before the season, it's not a must-win year, which kind of pissed me off, quite frankly.
I agree. Yeah.
So I don't feel like Preller's getting the pressure from Seidler, and especially since Seidler took the full ownership over Ron Fowler. So maybe, and Fowler was the owner in 2020 when he made all those moves at the deadline, Preller, that is. So it could be just him feeling internal pressure and really wanting to win. And of course he does. That's his job. But it's not a good look, getting back to the Lauer conversation, of seemingly not caring about prospects or guys that at the big league level now that aren't working out. Like, and I guess it's another thing to add about Preller. And, you know, when the team has been winning and it's getting better, you know, he's spending more time with the big league team. But he's a scout at heart, and so maybe part of it is how Lauer is feeling, is that Preller went and scouted and wasn't with the team all of the time, and so that maybe came off as, okay, he doesn't care about us. He's scouting 17, 18-year-olds in high school instead of trying to help develop us and talk to us. Again, I wasn't in the clubhouse. I wasn't there, but that's just something that I would think about just based on you know, the past experience. Anything else to add on that?
No, I just think it's not a good look for when a player comes out openly and just says that. It's a little worrying. That's all I can really say. Considering how much we've given up, that at the end of the day, you know, this is what we have. We're in a win now mode. And I think that's a big part of what Preller was thinking when he got rid of all the prospects. He wants to win now.
Yeah. Again, I don't fault him for it, but I don't think he's done it. There's definitely been some moves that he probably regrets. All right.
100%.
Moving on to Sunday. Obviously, Rooker was sent down. Clev was brought up. Clev ended up going 3, 1 run, 1 walk, 2, struck out 5, 1, 6-4. Martinez came in. Suarez came in. Hill came in. Rogers came in. So a lot of guys pitched. And this looked like it was going to be a good win. Then it looked like, uh-oh, this is Thursday all over again. And then it was another good win. So it was up and down, up and down. Bottom of the first, Wong hit the home run on Clev's second pitch. Wasn't a great start.
It was a good pitch, too.
Yeah. It just wasn't.
He hit a spot.
Yeah. But, I mean, I guess, yeah, a home run's a home run still.
That's true.
With Clev, you know, at the beginning there, it felt like he definitely was getting more comfortable as the start went on, right?
I agree, yeah.
Because at the beginning, He was throwing fastballs outside and up. He just didn't feel totally comfortable. He was slipping on the mound a couple times. I don't really take anything into that. But, I mean, overall, yeah, am I surprised that he only went 60 pitches? I thought he was going to go 4 or 5 innings. That's what I said on the pregame show. And he ended up going 3 innings. Was some of that because the start of his outing wasn't great? Was some of that because they had Nick Martinez coming in after him? Maybe a combination of those things. And he had 15 days? It was since like May 17th since he had started last. He didn't have a rehab start. So he had the the triceps injury, meaning just go play shortstop at batting practice for a couple weeks. I don't think he was hurt. I was at Petco. Jacob was at Petco. He was going around as normal. Now, maybe one day he woke up. Oh, I feel a little pain here in my triceps. I'll tell the training staff. And the training staff's like, yay, let's put him on the IL. Let's save some innings. Yeah. let's save some innings later in the year. How about this, Bomell? Huh? I think this is a good idea. Yeah. Maybe that happened. I don't think he was hurt. But he was getting more comfortable. He gave up that one run to Wong. Wong ended up homering later in the day. We'll get to that. In the top of the third, this ended up maybe being huge. They ended up winning the game, so I guess it wasn't like huge, huge. But Jace Peterson in the third, I'm so tired of that guy. Good thing we're done with him for the regular season.
Gosh.
Obviously, he had that big hit off Taylor Rogers on Thursday and shouldn't have even faced him, by the way. But and then today, top of the third, he had that diving play down the baseline, taking notes from Manny. Kept it 1-0 Brewers there, and that would have scored a run. I thought that was going to be huge, especially when the Brewers came back, tied the game, and it was like, oh, no, you're just looking back at that play. I think Nola hit that. Austin Nola, out of all people, holy cow.
Yeah.
Alfaro should be the starting catcher right now.
I agree.
I mean, later in the game, I don't know if you saw or anyone in the chat saw that botched catch that he had or didn't make on, I forget if it was a breaking ball or something. It was a strike, and it ended up being called not a strike because dropped it. It just wasn't pretty. Anyway, top of the fifth, the Padres, I think, showed that they're a good team. They took advantage of the other team's errors and miscues, right? That's what good teams do. They take advantage of those. Grish, don't know what he was doing. Should have been caught in a pickle. Milwaukee shortstop. I don't know who the shortstop was. I forget his name.
Reyes?
Yeah, he dropped a throw getting to third. Profar drove him in after that, made it 1-1. Crony had an RBI single to right, made it 2-1. Voit had a sacrifice ground out, made it 3-1. But then it seemed like things were going well. Nick Martinez had 4 shutout innings.
Yeah.
And then
he looked good.
Bomell, yeah, he looked really good. The changeup was good as always.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bomell decided to send Martinez out there for that 5th inning. And I don't really understand that. You had Garcia, you had Suarez, Garcia to be back-to-back days, I believe. Rogers, obviously. You had enough guys that could come in. I think Nick Martinez did his job. The 4 innings, he did his job. I don't know why you had to send him out again. Now, obviously, that's in hindsight for us to say here. But I didn't really like that decision, because he already had gone those 4 innings. And in the 8th, he allowed a single, gave up the home run to Wong. Wong's second homer of the day. Martinez finished with 4 innings of work, 4-plus innings, 2 runs, 4 hits. Didn't walk any. Struck out 4 and gave up that home run to Wong. And he was good. I'm not going to totally criticize him and say, oh, man, that giving up that home run really sucked. I mean, I just don't think he should have been in the game. Like, he did his job through those 4 innings. I think his job was done.
No, exactly. I mean, he was on it was a piggyback start. You know, if you combine them two, they went 7 innings. That's a good start. And I think that, you know, it, they started, we're starting to figure it out. It looked like, you know, after the single, I would have maybe had a mound visit and just, you know, maybe considered taking him out. But honestly, he shouldn't have even gone out, in my opinion, when you had that many people ready to go in the bullpen, you know. Tim Hill was even available, as we said. There were options besides Nick Martinez who did his job. You know, he had a great start, or great piggyback start. I don't know what you would call that. He did his job, and, you know, asking him to go another one, I felt like it was kind of pushing it, even though he did look very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, you know, when Robert Suarez came in, it's kind of like, okay, if Robert Suarez is coming in, he's a righty. Nick Martinez is a righty. So why not just start Suarez in that inning? It's not like you brought in a lefty because of matchups and you were planning on having Martinez, a righty, start the inning and bring in a lefty. Like, that's not what happened. Suarez came in, allowed a single, two walks, wasn't good, loaded the bases, two outs, and Tim Hill came in, and he was huge. By the way, my mom comments here, what was the throw down for nothing? I think from Nola. No idea. maybe
Kim
he
had to dive and stop
I think
it.
There,
yeah.
Yeah, I think there was a lefty at bat, and he threw it down.
Yeah, after the strikeout.
No idea what was happening there. Yeah, he was seeing Anthony. Yeah, Nola was seeing ghosts of runners. No idea what he was doing there. But with Tim Hill, holy cow, this guy. Just get up, monster drink, come in. Eighth inning. Or was it eighth inning? No.
Yeah.
Yeah, eighth inning. Yeah.
Automate came in.
To finish off the eighth, he was huge. Suarez threw more ball strikes, by the way. When Hill came in, he got Jace Peterson to pop out to Kim at short and came back out for the ninth. I was kind of surprised by that.
Yeah.
Because Tim Hill's known as a matchups guy. Like, that's just who he is. It felt like he was going to finish the inning, and okay, that's his role. He ends up coming back out. Now, I guess I understand, like, in terms of pitch count, why he came back out, because he hadn't pitched in a while, and feel free to throw him out there. But in terms of his role on the team, I do admit a little surprise about that. But he came in, had the shutout ninth inning, which led to the 10th inning with Azokar on second. Profar had the single to, I think, right field. And then Crony comes up, hits a home run, a three-run bomb, his second home run in as many days. And holy cow, did they need that? I mean,
that was huge, yeah.
I went into the game on the pregame show. I was like, yeah, okay, I'd be fine with the series split. That's what I would have been fine with going into the series, or that's what I was fine with going into the series. And so if they lost, okay. But then when the game starts and you're up 3-1, it's like, no, they need to win this game. Yeah. And for them to end up winning this game, and Crony was pumped up, everyone was pumped up. And it's not just that they won the game. 6-4, Milwaukee did end up scoring a run against Rodgers in that ninth inning or 10th inning. It wasn't an earned run because there was a runner on second to start the inning, which I still think is the dumbest freaking rule ever. Anyway, what was I saying? Crony. It's not just that they won, but it's that Cronenworth seems like he's back now. And with Tatis out probably for another few weeks, because he's got a lot to do. One, the scan has to go right tomorrow. And then he has to hit off the tee, flips, batting practice. I was talking about this with my mom while we were watching the game. Batting practice, live BP, rehab games. Who knows how long they want to do the rehab games. So it's going to be a process. And with Tatis out, you can't count on Kim. Profar's had good at-bats, but he's not. I guess, you know what, I'll just leave Profar in the good category. Be nice to that. Let's say, okay, so Profar, Manny, and then Cronenworth, let's say, is hot. You have him. Mm-hmm. You have who else is?
Voit's been pretty good.
Yeah, Voit. I still hesitant to ever put him in any good category just because he's striking out a lot. I mean, Mazar, if they freaking played him, like, you bring him up, he led the PCL in batting average, on base percentage, and no, we're afraid to have him play against less. I don't understand that. I mean, Azokar, I guess you could put Azokar in that good category, but like he doesn't play every day, you know? So Hosmer, no, he's not in the good category. His batting average is now below 300, and in a matter of like a couple weeks, a few weeks, it's went from like 390 to below 300. He had a great swinging bunt today for a sack bunt, if you guys didn't see that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and he still doesn't know how to pick at first base. He somehow is doing it with his eyes closed. I don't get that.
That's what you do in Little League. I don't get this. Yeah.
Anyway, so you pretty much have like three guys that I'm confident in, and they're the top three in the lineup. And so if Crony is back, that's huge for the dang, that's huge for the lineup. Because you know what he can do. It's not just the power, and he's not even known as a power hitter. It's the line drives. He's fast. Yeah, he is sneaky fast. Obviously the defense, but I'm talking about at the plate. How big of an impact if Crony's back? I mean, this can win them games. We've seen it the two games. It's won them the two games.
Yeah, I mean, if Cronenworth's back, I mean, I felt like before, you know, Cronenworth's been back, I guess you could say, I only really could depend on Manny Machado. I felt like that was the only guy confident, if he stepped up to the plate with runners in scoring position, that we would score a run. You know, 9 out of 10 times, that's who I was confident with. But, you know, if Cronenworth's starting to heat up, you know, Profar, I don't really like him at leadoff. I feel like that's not a leadoff hitter, but you know, if at the end of the day, that's what we got right now. He's getting at bats. You know, he got a hit today, so sure. But if Cronenworth can add that, and if he can add that extra base hit capability that he has and that he showed in these past couple games, that would be ginormous for this lineup. That, you know, is it was really bad. You know, we had a lot of players under 200. The majority of the batters batting under 200.
But like 2018.
Yeah, it was awful. It was, you know, I'm at the games every home game. It's awful to watch. It's not fun to watch. But if Cronenworth, you know, we can enter into the Crone Zone, as you know, Don likes to call it. I feel like that it would add so much to this lineup that just needs it so bad.
Yeah, and my mom says, so you think Grisham's the expendable player? No. I still believe in Grisham. There's some that don't. And even if I didn't believe in him, I still don't think he's really expendable. Like, I don't know how much value he has on the trade market right now. And when you look at the outfield, yeah, you could have power hitting outfielders with Rooker. I know he's not on the roster right now, but him, Mazzara, Myers when he comes back, and then Profar. But you're going to put a Zocar in center field every day? I don't know. I'm fine with that. But I think the Padres still like having that left field bat, whether it's at the bottom of the order or at the top of the order, if he ever gets consistently hot again. I think they feel that that's appealing to them. And with the control that he has, I don't think they're willing to give up on him yet. I think people that are more expendable in trades are guys like Lamet or like
For sure.
Weathers, for like a Joey Gallo or someone that is a free agent at the end of the year who like just doesn't have value right now. And the team that he's on would probably be happy to have him gone, you know, that sort of thing.
I want to add onto that, that question. I feel like Grisham's been kind of trending upwards these past couple days as well. I feel like the series kind of showed that, you know, we've seen glimpses of what he can be. You know, maybe he's not the leadoff hitter, but he's still a reliable bat. He's still a really good defender, even though, you know, he does make some questionable decisions sometimes. People forget he won a gold glove in 2020. I know it was only a 60-game season, but, you know, it was still a gold glove. At the end of the day, he's a good defender. He's got a good bat. You know, he's had a couple clutch moments this year, I would say. And I feel like he's not someone that Preller is willing to trade for the value he's currently got, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I agree. What is this username? Ib Henriksen?
Ib Henriksen.
All right, cool. He says, at least Hosmer helped out in April and May when the team wasn't hitting at all. Well, I mean,
he's done that every year.
He helped out a little bit in May. But let's not say that he was Willie Mays or Barry Bonds in May. I mean, look at his splits. I've talked about his splits. His numbers were really, really far down compared to April. April, he does it every year. I said it. I warned people, like, just let's compare the stats. Let's compare his stats in at the end of May. And in fact, here, let's look at him again. He just, I don't know.
He's an early
something happens.
Better.
Something.
Yeah.
He flips the switch on when the season starts. Prove his haters wrong that his wife sees on Twitter, and then, and then in May, the switch maybe starts to switch off, and it's a small gradual process. In the last 7 days, I don't think it's bringing into account of today's game, but he's hitting .091 in the last 7 days. In the last 14 days, he's hitting .222. Last 28 days, it's .242. So you see the numbers are going up as the days increase the last days, because he's seems like he's getting worse. The last 7 days, his what is SOPS plus? Split relative to the league split. Okay, I have no idea. That's too much. Maybe we can ask Evan, who is going to Cal. Maybe we'll ask him about that. Okay, let's just go with. No, they don't even have OPS plus up on here. Anyway, all you really need to know. I mean, batting average. It's not the most important thing anymore. But he has 2 hits in his last 23 at bats or 23 plate appearances in the last 7 days. Not including. I don't think it's including. So there you go. And he had a double today that was like 2 inches from going foul.
Yeah, he didn't even know it was fair. He looked at the box. He thought it was going to be foul, I think.
Yeah.
I think Yelich did too.
Yeah. All right. So we talked about their. I mean, anything else? I mean, Rogers, obviously, he's fine. There's not a whole lot to talk about there.
Nothing to worry about.
How about Manny? Manny Machado. Okay. This is, I have it on tape, okay? This is a little bit of a joke, but I have it on tape here. Manny Machado, when he comes up to the plate in Milwaukee this series, this is what happened.
Did you hit the thing on your soundboard?
Yep. I got a boo sound on my soundboard. That's pretty much, oh, I mean, gosh. It was loud. Like, you could tell it today. It was loud.
It's crazy.
It was louder than the last few days. And there were fans chanting over in the stands. It's like, okay, so the guy's not allowed to go over one day. The only thing that mattered was that your team is losing and you're chanting over at a guy that you're still mad at. That from, what was it? When was that? 2018 or something.
18-19,
yeah. Yeah, the half season he had with the Dodgers where he stepped on Jesus Aguilar's ankle. Okay. I don't condone that.
No.
But he's not the same guy. He's definitely matured. He's not on the Dodgers anymore.
That's what did it to him.
Yeah. I guess. Just relax, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. There was a big boost. Like, it felt like a louder boost than what Dodger Stadium does to him. So that was really, really weird. But I did want to mention that. He fed off those boos in what I think the second and third game of the series. He had a diving play down the line. Yes. He had a home run on Friday, the Musgrove game. He had an extra base hit, I think, yesterday. Forget what he did today, but he made a good bare hand play that Hosmer couldn't pick. I put that up on the Twitter. People were like, yeah, way to go, Hos, trying to pick the ball with your eyes closed. We touched on that. My mom says, I like the odd Let's Go Padres we could hear over the TV. There were some fans there, yeah.
We're pretty good now, yeah.
And that's been the case pretty much this year. I think that fans have shown up. You know, when Tatis is there, it's kind of like the Steph Curry effect. There's more Warriors fans in NBA arenas. Yeah. For anyone that doesn't know, I worked for an NBA team in New York. So I was there when Steph was there, and it's just different. Pre-game, there's no one there usually. When he was in the building, it was packed. So It's just different. And that's probably the Tatis effect with the Padres. There's more fans probably road games when Tatis is there. Being Padre fans, there may be just Tatis fans, kind of how in the NBA, it's you just follow the player. But with that said, no Tatis, I mean, fans have showed up. So, yeah, definitely.
It's been sold out multiple times at home and even on the road. I was up at it's just a side story I wanted to add on to that while we're on the topic. I was at Angel Stadium a little while ago, a couple weeks ago.
Talk about the Angels A's game.
You have Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani. I get they're playing the A's. A's are awful, right? I can't name one person on that team besides.
I can name their manager. Sean Murphy. I can name their manager. Here, my mom would like this. Mark Kotze went to Cal State Fullerton. Former Padres bench coach or hitting coach? I don't remember. Me and you, remember, we met him on the field. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Glad he got a shot with the A's. You know, they're awful. They're not the worst team in the league record-wise. There's a positive for them. But Angels fans don't show up for some odd reason. I was there. I was pumped to see, you know, a team that wasn't the Padres because, you know, I'm always there, right? But I had in my row, I had three Padre fans sitting next to me. And they asked me, they were like, hey, you guys here to see Mike Trout too? And I was like, yeah. And I was like, are you guys just not Angel fans or something? They're like, yeah, no, we're Padre fans too. I was like, oh, so this team travels for, they're all over. No, they're without, even without Tatis, they're all over. Padre fans are in full swing in every stadium, it seems like. And especially when the Padres are on the road. I just wanted to put that out there. I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, it's been good. There's been a lot of support for the Padres as they've gotten better. I think fans have been prouder to show out. Like, yeah, of course, you're going to find the bandwagon fans and the Tatis fans, not necessarily Padre fans. But that's still good news for the diehard fans, because that means that we have a player that's a generational talent that fans are willing to do that and say, yeah, hey, yeah, I'm not a full Padres fan, but I'm a Tatis fan, and that's why I'm showing up. You know, it's not like you didn't have people showing up to Citi Field or Minute Maid Park like last year, and saying, or in 2016, and being like, "Oh, I'm a Will Myers fan. Let me support this Will Myers jersey and all that." Like that didn't happen.
Yeah, you know? I don't know about that one.
Yeah. It's just a difference. All right. Let's preview. So the Padres 33-21 right now. I think they're a third of the way through the season now. Pitching's great. Pitching's great. Starting pitching specifically. The closer's been great. I know I'm still saying great, you know, even with a couple bad games. Like that's still great.
You can make mistakes.
Yeah. Manny, MVP, Gore, Rookie of the Year so far. They've had a lot of positives. And this is the majority of the season being without Cronenworth playing amazing, with Hosmer declining, with Nola not really doing much, with Trace Thompson really being in there for a little bit, with Will Myers being hurt a couple times, with Bob Melvin being sidelined for pretty much a full road trip, I just kept trying to find different things that maybe haven't gone great, but at the same time they're 33-21, so I like where they're at now. These next three games, Mets come into town, 36-19 or what they are right now.
Yeah, they're good.
The Dodger game's over, right? No, they're in the eighth inning.
Yeah, I thought it was still going.
Hang on. Let me reload the page. I think, yeah, they're in the eighth inning still. Okay. Mets are up 3-2. So let's say they're 37-19. Padres right now, 33-21. Carlos Carrasco on the mound tomorrow. Blake Snell on the mound for the Padres. Good luck for anyone going to the game tomorrow. Let's see how Snell does. When I went that Milwaukee game, the Manny bobblehead day, he pitched good. He wasn't throwing a lot of balls in the dirt. And I'm liking what I'm seeing out of him, you know, as of late and compared to that Philadelphia start. Mm-hmm. And then with Carrasco, he has a 3.63 ERA right now, 51 strikeouts. Nomar Mazara, looking at the numbers, it would be a right on left matchup if Mazara plays tomorrow. He's hitting 375 off of Carrasco in his career. That was probably with Texas when Mazara was better than probably a lot of other hitters in the American League. I mean, he was really good then.
It was good. Yeah.
But still, he has a good history against him. That's at 640. Another one at 640 on Tuesday. Darvish on the mound against Taijuan Walker. No DeGrom, no Scherzer for the Mets. So the Padres get a break there. Taijuan Walker, though, has a 2.88 ERA. Darvish, the ERA is inflated, so I'm not even going to say it because of that bad Giants start. But he's been tremendous the last, you know, couple times out. And then on Wednesday, that is also at 6:40. Usually it's a day game, but it's also at 6:40. Padres have a day off, I think, Thursday. Wednesday, Chris Bassitt for the Mets, 3.74 ERA, and then Sean Manaea. So the Padres definitely, I think, should win this series. They have a good chance to win it based on the pitching matchups. And, I mean, I don't even think that's fair to say anymore. Like, based on the pitching matchups, they have a chance to win it. Because if we're basing it on that, like we've done in the past, because that's usually what you do, just looking at previews and stuff. Right now, the Padres rotation, okay, they should win every freaking series that they play then because of how good the rotation is.
Seems to help them out.
Yeah. So it's really just based on if the offense can continue how they've done the last two games. Because I don't think you're going to shut out the Mets offense three games. Like it looked like they could have shut out the Brewers these last three games, shut them out on Friday and Saturday, and then allowed four runs today. But it was a low run total through before that Wong home run. So the pitching, you're going to give up some runs to the Mets. Alonso's been playing well. Mm-hmm. I thought I saw he has like 16 home runs or something like that. Lindor, I think, is playing better. Who else they got? Starling Marte, Jeff McNeil, Brandon Nimmo. It's a good team. And with Buck Showalter, I mean, this is a like Hall of Fame manager matchup. Showalter and Melvin. I mean, you're not watching the managers, but for a series, it'll be a fun series to watch, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be a low scoring kind of series, a short three game series. Hoping the Padres can at least get 2 out of 3. Especially with Darvish and Manaea on the bumps, and especially with, as you said, no DeGrom, Scherzer, I feel like we're at a better advantage than we would have been. I think that at the end of the day, it comes down to if the offense can supply runs with how well the pitchers pitch. Because the Mets are going to score. We're going to have to score more. Obviously, we're going to have to score more, but we're going to have to score more than we have been, I think.
Right. All right. I look on The Twitter. I've heard old people kind of say that. The Twitter.
Ben the Boomer.
Padres Twitter account. I guess they put out the pictures of the road trip or going back home.
Yeah.
Let's see what they're wearing today. Here.
Interesting fits so far.
You guys can see it. Okay. So Hosmer. What are you wearing? A red flannel,
it looks like. Yeah.
I can't zoom in. It's so dumb. I can't zoom in. Alfaro has a Gatorade cup, couple Gatorade cups. Manny's in his Jordans. I'm not a fan of Hosmer's shirt. I have no idea what that is. Maybe I'm not cool. Clev, that's just who Clev is.
That's Sunshine right there, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I can't really criticize him. That's just who he is. He's got hopefully the Gatorade cup. Luke Voigt. What is he? Is
that's
that
Luke Voigt? Yeah.
Is that a what kind of look is that?
I'm getting very hipster vibes from this. The tight white shirt is throwing me off a little bit. I can see absolutely everything on his chest right here. The pink shoes kind of giving it off too. I feel like he could have gone with maybe a simple, maybe black and white shoe. And the skinny jeans also not a. Not a look for me, in my opinion. Yeah.
Are those Top Gun sunglasses? I have never seen that, so I don't know. But
he's got the aviators on. He just watched Maverick this weekend.
And then Crony, he likes using his side duffel bag.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to brighten my screen. Hold on. There we go. Okay.
There we go. Manaea kind of in a bowling shirt, it looks like. An off kind of
looks like he
Ridley sewed bowling shirt.
Is that Peter Seidler's money there in that briefcase that he's holding? For Joe Musgrove?
Go deliver it to Joe, yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's...
Do the Potters are really strong, or are they just like wearing tight clothes? Because I'm seeing a lot of everything just up here, I'm noticing. Right on the chest is just...
I don't like ripped jeans. I don't even wear jeans. I'm more of a sweats guy. So whatever. With Ha-Sung Kim.
Yeah.
Profar looks good.
Simple.
Darvish
kind of wing, stepping out with
what does that say? Wing Anzer.
Found at the local H&M. Is that what hat is that?
I think that's is that the Fighters? The play is that the Japanese team or something? The team, maybe that's the team that he used to play for.
Oh yeah. I thought it was from my screen right here. It looks like a P. And you know, I like Snell's fits. I'm really liking the Cactus Jack shoes on the bottom for everyone that's, you know, into sneakers. It's just simple, something light, comfortable. I don't really like the color of the jeans, I'd say. I would go with the basic, I think, navy blue. But give an 8 out of 10, Blake. Hopefully you can pitch like that too.
Okay. Hold on one second. Let me look through the Padres' Twitter and see if they've uploaded Polaroids or anything. Yeah, okay. Here it is. I just don't want to share my screen if they haven't uploaded anything. Okay, here it is. This is at the Cronenworth homer after the Cronenworth home run. Are they doing a tunnel or something? Is that like the what is
like
that?
After the games? Yeah.
Is that after soccer games that they do that?
Yeah.
Like when you're kids?
You'd run through it. Yeah. That's pretty cool. I like that. They at the end of the year, they got to put all those out
you
know, in chronological order and see what they got. Yeah, that's cool.
Oh, they put out guess who? Jumbo Slash Jake Cronenworth. Yeah. All right. What are we doing? That's what DVD Pash asked. Well, just I wasn't planning on doing this, but Jacob's here and he's more of a fashion person than I am. So I just decided to pull those up and let's see how that is. He, for anyone that doesn't know, Jacob, he has a tons of hats now. And how many shoes do you have?
Right now, I haven't really gone too hard into shoes because of how expensive they are. And, you know, I am still in college, paying for college. I only have 6 right now, I would say, but that's over like a period of 2-3 years. I did just buy a pair, actually. But I mean, something simple, you know. I'm not going crazy like Blake probably is.
Well, I mean, okay, he probably has a room dedicated to them.
Yeah.
So
I got tons more money too. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure my roommate at St. John's isn't listening. But I think when we counted before I moved out, he had 20 pairs of shoes.
Yeah, that's
something like that. Some of them were in drawers. Some of them were in like cabinets. And there were some at the end of the semester that he pulled out, and it's like, I've never seen you wear these before. I had my basketball shoes for my job. I had my running shoes that had a hole in them because my mom said, I'm buying you new shoes. That's just the way I've always been, I guess. I just get comfortable with them. I had the dress shoes in case I needed to do something. That was it. No, I had snow shoes or whatever you call them.
You live in New York, yeah.
That was it. But yeah, I'm sure Snell, who has the biggest shoe, and Manny might have the biggest shoe collection. I don't know. It might be Snell and Manny.
I'm going to have to go with Snell just because, I'm on Instagram a lot. I see a lot. He posts a lot of his shoes or in his outfits because he likes to, take little portrait photos of himself, I guess, like little photo shoots or whatever. He's got all the hype beast kind of shoes. I think I'm going to have to go with Snell. But I do think Manny has it just because of, he's got all that money. He's probably spending it on a lot on shoes. But Snell's definitely got the crown, in my opinion.
Yeah.
For sure.
All right. Any last questions in the chat? Well, what should we talk about before that, before anyone asks us anything else? The Dodgers, is that game over yet? Let me see. It's eighth inning still, 4-2 Mets.
Go Mets. LFGM.
Until tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
Walker Buehler is, like, getting owned his last couple starts.
Oh, that's always fun to see.
I heard one reporter say, I think it was Mets reporter, so he probably wasn't watching Buehler's last start with the Pirates, where Tucapita Marcano hit a home run off of him. He was like, it's just a bad day off of just a bad day for Walker Buehler. No, it's been happening, actually, buddy. It's happening pretty frequently these last few starts. So that's nice to see. Elsewhere in the standings, past Memorial Day, so I think it's fine to look at standings. In the AL, Yankees are in first. Minnesota's in first in the Central. That division sucks. The second place team in the Central's below 500. And the West, kind of also sucks as well. Houston's the only team over 500 there.
That's crazy. That's crazy in my opinion.
The Angels started off pretty good. Mets are eight games up. They're eight games up on the Braves as we speak. That division's kind of bad.
The Braves got off to a slow start, too.
Girardi was fired by the Phillies, obviously.
Mm-hmm. They're 3-0 with their new guy, though, I guess. I'm not sure.
Rob Thompson, who isn't new. I've never understood when someone gets fired and the president of baseball ops or the GM says, let's bring in a new voice. I think we need a new voice. And they just have the interim bench coach move to the manager's office. That's not a new voice. Rob Thompson, the Phillies are winning. Rob Thompson, maybe he's having a big influence. He was there before.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't get that. Cincinnati, remember when they were like 3-22? They're 18-35 now.
They had a hot streak there for a second.
Yeah. Milwaukee's in first there. St. Louis, I think, is playing right now on Sunday Night Baseball. So that might change if St. Louis wins tonight, I think, against the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the National League West, Colorado's in last place, already 12.5 games back of the Dodgers. Arizona is 26-29. They're 10 games back. San Francisco is 29-24. They are 6 games back. And then we're obviously 33-21. And hopefully we'll be 2 games back if the Mets can finish off the Dodgers. Dodgers are 35-18 before the end of this Sunday game that they're playing right now against the Mets. So that's the standings for every division. I don't see any other questions, so I think this will be it. Anything else to add?
Go Padres.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good ending. I think we'll end with that. Again, this has been episode 178 of the Talking Friars podcast and YouTube show. Jacob is back for today. We'll see. Maybe he'll be sick and tired of me. We'll see.
Probably.
I'm your host, Ben Fadden. Jacob Zimmerman with me, signing off. Let's go Padres. We'll be back. I'll be back for the pregame show tomorrow. Padres Mets starting up. Have a good Sunday night, everyone, and we'll see you later.